think that we can get much higher than this.
You are listening to Can't Get Much Higher. My name is Chris Dalariva, and I am your host. This week, I feel like it would be remiss if I didn't mention that Beyoncé's latest album, Cowboy Carter, came out. The discourse around this album has been nothing short of astonishing. I've not only seen people reacting to the album, but I've seen people reacting to how other people are reacting to the album. I wouldn't be surprised if there were also people reacting to those reactions. Regardless, I think one of the most fascinating things about this album has nothing to do with the album itself, but rather how the first single was announced, namely during a Verizon commercial during the Super Bowl. You might not think this is strange. Global superstar partners with billion-dollar corporation. Makes sense. But it got me thinking about how we are so far from the notion of caring about if a musician sells out that it's not really even possible to do it anymore. This week, I want to talk about that. If you aren't honest about rock and roll, Dan Zanes told the camera, people can sense it. Though I think Zanes is correct, the problem is that people didn't think he was being honest. Dan Zanes was a member of the Del Fuegos, a Boston-area band founded in 1980. In the handful of years after the group's inception, they grew a sizable following and a reputation for making some of the best rootsy garage rock around. Baby. Then the Miller Brewing Company called. Miller was working on an ad campaign based around the slogan, Miller's Made the American Way. The idea was to feature up-and-coming American bands in their ad to lend credence to the slogan. It may have worked for Miller, but it didn't go well for the Del Fuegos.
It's folk music, pretty much. But, you know, that's because it's for folks. Miller's Made the
American Way. That commercial aired in 1985 during Live Aid, the transcontinental benefit to raise funds to end the famine in Ethiopia. The group said it immediately destroyed their credibility. They not only sold out, but it looked like they were cashing a check at the expense of those suffering in Africa. The band dissolved in the next few years. You can dispute how important this ad was to the Del Fuego's demise, but you can't dispute that there was a perception that appearing in a commercial, that selling out, could lead to a band's demise. While I was growing up in the 2000s, this idea existed, but it wasn't as powerful. In fact, I can remember a song like Are You Gonna Be My Girl by Jet growing more popular after it was featured in a commercial for Apple. How could a commercial have such a different effect on a song and a band just two decades apart? How could kids today comment, get that bag with abandon when a rising influencer is selling a product unrelated to what they typically post about? How could Beyoncé announcing a song during a Super Bowl commercial feel almost mundane? In short, what happened to selling out? One of the foremost experts on this topic is Dan Ozzy. Along with running the newsletter Zero Cred, Ozzy wrote Sellout, the major label feeding frenzy that swept punk, emo, and hardcore, a book that chronicles how major labels courted 11 independent punk acts between 1994 and 2007. In the introduction, he chronicles some of the dynamics at play at this time. Quote, after Green Day left the indie world for the mainstream, a flood of other punk bands were given the chance to follow. The support system these bands were being offered was enticing. Proper studio accommodations, budgets to make music videos, and placements in malls and chain stores. But with this opportunity came a catch. The insular, underground communities that had incubated these musicians were not about to let their scene be ransacked. The most ardent defenders of the underground grew militant towards those bold enough to break out of the communities that had birthed them. To toe the line, longtime fans found themselves turning their backs on bands to which they'd once been so devoted. End quote. The idea of selling out is not exclusive to the music world, and the dynamics at play when Beyoncé partners with a corporation are of course different than a small punk band signing to a major label or licensing their music to a commercial. But I think there are some through lines that can allow us to define selling out with some specificity. Number one, selling out is when an entity compromises their values or morals for a sum of money. An example of this would be Sex Pistol Johnny Lydon doing a commercial for Country Life Butter.
Do I buy Country Life Butter?
Selling out is also when an entity changes something about themselves in hopes of reaching a wider audience and subsequently making more money. An example of this would be Maroon 5 embracing a more pop-oriented sound. After their guitar-driven debut, Songs About Jane. There is a good deal of overlap between these ideas, but they are distinct in that the second doesn't involve any moral complications. Nevertheless, the connection is doing something for a big paycheck. In fact, before its usage in the arts, the term was associated with corporations and politicians. For example, in 1906, writer Thomas Watson complained of how, quote, local Western corruptionists sell out to Wall Street, end quote. As consumer culture took hold throughout the 20th century, we see the term become more common in all its various shapes and sizes. When looking at Google's Ngram Viewer, a tool that lets you track the usage of specific words and phrases across a large corpus of text, you see that the term sellout initially grew in usage between the 1920s and 1940s. From 1960 to 2000, usage was relatively consistent before dropping in almost every year since 2003. While Google's tool is going to capture even the non-musical uses of the term, let's look at what was going on in music when the decline began. Music industry revenues rapidly contracted after the year 2000 as online piracy sites like Napster and LimeWire grew in popularity. Suddenly, there wasn't as much money to go around. Artists and labels had to look for alternative revenue streams to compensate for declining record sales. Licensing your music to an advertisement was the perfect way to try to close the revenue gap. According to critic Jessica Hopper, those declining revenues also led to layoffs at the labels. Many of those who lost their jobs ended up in advertising and marketing. Licensing your music for an ad not only made economic sense, but also felt less shady given that you might be working with an old friend. But why hasn't the concept of selling out returned now that industry revenues are increasing in the streaming age? I think it largely has to do with social media. In the social media age, labels are waiting for artists to prove that they have a reliable audience before signing them. Again, if a label isn't going to cut you a check, you need other income to survive. Furthermore, a large part of the idea behind social media is based on selling out. If you aren't willing to chase virality, then you aren't doing it correctly. When an entire generation of artists is raised with that notion etched into their brains, it's hard to be disgusted by the idea of selling out, let alone even understand what it means. And the term really has lost meaning in the last few decades. By 2013, the term was so far in that Gawker felt the need to define it when writing an article on the topic. Quote, "Once upon a time, not so long ago, there was an idea that some things in this world should be able to exist free from the influence of money, that these things should be done because of their own intrinsic value." What that article is getting at is that selling out compromises your authenticity. You've chosen profits over honest art. As I've noted in the past on this podcast, I'm increasingly skeptical of the notion of authenticity in music. That said, I think it would be beneficial if we question what is driving us to do something, artistic or not. It is not healthy to turn everything you do into a marketable product. And if you need a guide for how not to turn yourself into a product, remember Angus MacLeese. Angus MacLeese was the original drummer of the Velvet Underground. When the group booked their first gig in December 1965, opening for the middle class at a New Jersey high school, he quit in protest of the $75 they were going to be paid. The Velvet Underground, according to Angus MacLeese, was selling out. MacLeese was soon replaced by Maureen Tucker, thus rounding out the Velvet Underground's classic lineup of Lou Reed, Sterling Morrison, and John Cale. Though I don't think anybody could accuse the Velvet Underground of selling out, I think we could all use a little Angus MacLeese in our lives to remind ourselves that we are people, not products. As always, we recommend a new song and an old song each week. This week's new song is called Cinderella by Remy Wolf. I guess by traditional standards, Remy Wolf has sold out. She competed on American Idol, is signed to a subsidiary of Universal Music Group, and has had her music appear in commercials. But when you can ride a groove as well as Wolf can, I will let you sell out all you want. Cinderella, Wolf's latest song, laden with soulful horns and a gym class whistle that harkens back to Donna Summer's Bad Girls, is probably my favorite song right now. If you're not shouting along with her, "Me and the Boys in the Hotel Lobby" refrain by the end of the track, then we aren't cut from the same cloth.
Belly when I'm driving home, like low tide, moon so bright, moving my hips from left.
The old song this week takes us back to 1965. It's called The Clapping Song by Shirley Ellis. One of the great joys in life is when you're listening to an old song and realize that it influenced a more contemporary song. That joy is extra warm and overflowing if the two songs are wildly different. With that in mind, you can imagine the joy I felt when I heard Shirley Ellis's The Clapping Song for the first time last week. After cracking the top 10 with The Nitty Gritty and The Name Game in 1963 and 1964, Ellis and her collaborator Lincoln Chase were looking to continue their string of success. That's when they put together The Clapping Song, a novelty about, you guessed it, clapping. While the song is a ton of fun, the thing that caught my ear was the first line, quote, 369, the goose drank wine, the monkey chewed tobacco on the streetcar line, end quote. Almost 40 years later, Lil Jon would echo that line on his crunk classic, Get Low. If this is proof of anything, it's that you never know from where inspiration will strike.
Now she won't.
That is the program. My name is Christopher Dallariva. You just listened to Can't Get Much Higher. As I like to remind you during every podcast, Can't Get Much Higher is also a newsletter. Newsletter subscribers get access to additional content that is not available on the podcast. If you want to get to that newsletter, just go to the description of your podcast provider or wherever you're listening, and there should be a link. There's also links to listen to all the new and old songs that we have recommended. And I got nothing else to say, so I'll have our little theme music play out. Have a good week.